from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali. We begin in San Francisco, where the e-cigarette maker Juul Labs says it will end its support of Proposition C. That's a ballot measure that would overturn the city's ban on the sale of e-cigarettes. The company had spent millions of dollars on the campaign. In a statement issued last night, Juul's CEO said the company, quote, must strive to work with regulators, policymakers, and other stakeholders. The move comes as Juul and e-cigarettes are facing greater scrutiny across the country, and as its last CEO stepped down last week. Prop C will remain on the city's November ballot. Well, rural California counties where agriculture is big business have a big problem: stolen farming equipment. Law enforcement in counties from Tulare to San Luis Obispo are leaning on a new tool to deal with theft. It's called Smart Water, not to be confused with the bottled water brand you might know. From the Central Coast, KCBX reporter Greta Mart reports.
Smart Water CSI is a commercial product that is colorless and tasteless. And when a tiny bit is applied to items like a tractor, copper tubing, or farm tools, it leaves an invisible marker that lasts up to 5 years.
And it has a code in it, and it looks like water. It's clear. It has certain chemicals in it, so we can mark property, particularly in the farming industry.
That's Jim Vogue, San Luis Obispo County's undersheriff. The substance is invisible until police shine a special UV light on it. Then the Smart Water marks glow a greenish yellow, which leads them to the registered owner, not unlike a pet's microchip. Agriculture is a billion-dollar industry in this county, and the equipment is often a target of thieves. Tim Ward is the district attorney in Tulare County. It was the first California county to start using the product. Ward says the sheriff's department there has even made a video.
So when an inmate is being booked and, you know, they've been arrested and they're being booked and they're waiting in the lobby, there's this, you know, loop video playing talking about how Smart Water, something that you cannot see, can be used against you if you are, you know, stealing property.
He says it's been an effective deterrent and is used as evidence in police reports. The San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office bought 450 Smart Water CSI kits to give out to farmers and ranchers who want to start applying it to their ag equipment. For the California Report, I'm Greta Mart in San Luis Obispo.
Yesterday, we told you about Governor Gavin Newsom signing a bill that allows college athletes to benefit from product endorsements and other uses of their names and images. Now, we're hearing from the athletes themselves. D.B. Pradam is a senior at Santa Clara University. She plays for the women's soccer team, and she says Senate Bill 206 is the first of many big steps forward for female college athletes.
It's interesting because there's so much limitation to in regards and in comparison to these male athletes. With we have the USL and then we have the MLS, and then they also have opportunities abroad, and we only have one league that we can go into inside the states.
But despite the lack of professional opportunities for women, Pradam says since she was five, she's dreamed of playing soccer professionally and plans to graduate early to pursue her dreams of entering the draft. That new law, by the way, takes effect in 2023. Last week, tens of thousands of Northern Californians were cast into the dark on purpose, part of power shutoffs by PG&E aimed at reducing the risk of fire. But it wasn't the first time. Back in June, the utility carried out a similar large-scale shutoff, and it turns out they still have a lot of details to iron out. Any day now, PG&E is expected to issue a report required by its regulator on this most recent round of shutoffs, which hit parts of Wine Country and the Sierra foothills. Advocates for the disadvantaged who watched it all play out aren't giving PG&E a passing grade. PG&E is required to give notice, including to customers who speak languages other than English, like Spanish, Chinese, and Vietnamese, among others. Melissa Kasnitz is the legal director for the Center for Accessible Technology in Berkeley. She says she was tracking PG&E's website as the shutoffs played out.
And I'll start by saying that providing information on a website when you've turned off people's power is problematic in all kinds of ways, because people can't necessarily access the website, and disadvantaged populations, generally speaking, are less likely to have web access than other people, even when the power is on. But beyond that, PG&E was not updating its information provided in language to customers who don't speak English.
From what you saw?
I affirmatively was checking the website regularly, and PG&E dropped the ball very badly in providing notice in languages other than English.
PG&E acknowledged to the California Report that on the first day of this most recent round of shutoffs, the utility was in fact delayed in posting updates in those other languages due to translation time. But they said by the next day they were offering timely updates and added that it's actively working to streamline its process. Kasnitz and other advocates will also be scouring PG&E's forthcoming report for how many medically vulnerable patients, including those whose lives depend on medical equipment, were notified during the shutoffs. A plant disease that causes oak trees to suddenly die has killed millions of oak and tan oak trees in California forests from Monterey to Humboldt counties. Now, sudden oak death disease is being detected further north in Del Norte County near the Oregon border. KQED's Peter Arcuni has more.
A group of volunteers discovered the two infected trees during a citizen science event in Jedediah State Park. The pathogen, a microscopic parasite, seeps through the tree's bark and cuts off the flow of nutrients it needs to live. Scientists from UC Berkeley confirmed the outbreak. The disease appears on trees as sticky, tar-like spots. There's no known cure for sudden oak death. Forest managers hope that with only a few trees testing positive in Del Norte County, there may be a chance to remove them before the disease can spread. For the California Report, I'm Peter Arcuni.
If you're a parent, odds are good that you have some thoughts about the cost of childcare in our state. Where does all that money go? Well, caretakers say not enough of it goes to them. A new law signed yesterday by Governor Gavin Newsom makes unionizing an option for those who care for kids in their homes. KQED's Katie Orr starts us off this morning.
The bill will allow 40,000 in-home providers who look after children receiving state child care subsidies to form a union. Through it, the providers will be able to negotiate with the state over issues like reimbursement rates, which often fall below market prices. Nancy Harvey is an in-home provider in Oakland. She says the new law means a lot to her.
It's speaking volumes that we're appreciated and that our work matters, and that people are finally recognizing the fact that California does not move forward unless they have a strong, substantial early ed program.
The majority of child care providers in California are women of color. Supporters of the measure have been fighting for a child care union for about 15 years. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Let's head south now. Residents in some of L.A.'s priciest neighborhoods say they're worried about natural gas leaking from a storage facility near Marina del Rey. Part of their concern stems from the owner, the utility SoCalGas, which also operates the Aliso Canyon gas facility in L.A.'s Porter Ranch, which 4 years ago became the site of the largest methane leak in U.S. history. Reporter Larry Buell has more.
Miriam Fano said she moved to Playa del Rey because it's beautiful, near the Bayona wetlands.
Unfortunately, it is also an oil and gas field, which is seeping and leaking and leaching as we speak. It is a danger to the community.
For years, area residents have blamed various health issues on the Playa del Rey natural gas storage field. After an infrared video by advocates surfaced appearing to show multiple gas leaks, City Council member Mike Bonin called for an investigation. If approved, that process could take years. A 2018 report by the California Council on Science and Technology found that Playa del Rey poses a greater risk than Aliso Canyon in the event of a blowout. Even though it contains a small amount of gas, Playa del Rey is very close to homes, schools, and LAX. In an email, a spokesperson for SoCalGas said that all storage wells at Playa del Rey have been thoroughly tested and that methane detectors have been installed. Residents want the facility, which is more than 75 years old, closed. For the California Report, I'm Larry Buell in Los Angeles.
After months of planning, California's first fully online community college, CalBright, launches today. KQED's Vanessa Roncagno says that's good news for some students, but it's got some colleges worried.
Former Governor Jerry Brown proposed the online college to help workers get the skills they need to move into better jobs. CalBright leaders say so far over 1,000 people have shown interest in enrolling. 28-year-old Cheyenne Ramirez is one of them. She says her job as a warehouse administrator is barely enough to make it in the Bay Area.
I just want to make sure I can keep up and be able to still live here.
She's hoping the online college's cybersecurity program will help her do that, especially since CalBright is free for all students and offers a more flexible schedule than traditional colleges. But around the state, lots of community colleges are struggling with declining enrollment. To some, Calbright looks like trouble.
It's a competition that we don't need at a time we don't need it.
Donald Moore is faculty senate president for the Peralta District in the East Bay. His senate passed a resolution against the college that it plans to take to the state level. The college is starting with a slow rollout. Only the first 400 or so students who sign up today will be able to enroll. For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Rancagno in Oakland.
And finally this morning, for the tech set, the iPhone can seem like an indispensable accessory. For older users, though, they're not always so intuitive. KQED's Mary Franklin Harvin spoke with an engineer who has spent his whole career figuring out how to make the design of everyday things more accessible for everyone.
Don Nerman has a bone to pick with Apple.
At the core of the iPhone 11 Pro design is a stainless steel structural band and a three-dimensional glass back.
When the smartphones came out, and we started having screens that you just touched, and Apple decided, I believe, that, ooh, we have to make these aesthetically pleasing.
Today, Nerman directs UC San Diego's design lab, but in the 90s, he was a VP at Apple. Back then, he says, they used to pride themselves on the fact that no one needed a manual to use their computers. But these days, the iPhone puts form ahead of function, says Nerman.
Do you swipe up or down or left or right or with one finger or two finger or three finger? How do you know?
Users born in the iPhone era have memorized these gestures, he says, but they're not intuitive. To be more inclusive of all consumers, no matter their age, Nerman says devices should give clearer feedback in response to users' actions. For example, pressing a button is more direct than swiping. He also points out that low-contrast screens can be hard for the visually impaired. In Nerman's eyes, the qualities society prioritizes, like youth, intelligence, and mobility, are reflected in the way we design. And when products are geared towards elders, they're often clunky and scream geriatric, like walkers, for instance.
They look like they're medical devices, and they send out a message, hey, I'm old and feeble.
But some products designed to accommodate impairments do go mainstream. Nerman's friend designed the OXO cushion handle potato peeler because his wife had arthritis and struggled to grip regular peelers. Turns out, this peeler was easier for everyone to use, and now it's hard to find a kitchen without one. In addition to prioritizing youth, engineers often favor logic over the way humans actually behave, Nerman says.
You have to take people the way they are, not the way you want them to be. Well, they still take people the way they want them to be.
Nerman says he's had an uptick in the number of companies reaching out to him for inclusive design advice. And it's about time. By 2030, state officials project there will be more than 9 million Californians over the age of 65. For the California Report, I'm Mary Franklin Harvin.
Support for the California Report comes from Paint Care. Now with 760 drop-off sites in California where households and businesses can recycle their leftover paint. More at paintcare.org. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And Strauss Family Creamery, celebrating 25 years of environmental leadership, collaborative farmer relationships, and minimally processed 100% organic dairy products. Learn more at straussfamilycreamery.com.
And that is the California Report for this Tuesday, October 1st, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great day, everyone.